Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5E Filibuster.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am David Johnson, joined by a cadre of glitterati. And that would be headlined by Eric Asperslager.
I don't think he used either of those words correctly, so. But I'm not really sure.
I think glitterati is an adjective even, so who knows. And Alice Nelson returning to us after she joined us for the Buster Award.
Woohoo, yeah. It's been a while.
And Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
All right, so we're going to take into this weekend with all the kind of mirth and mayhem you've come to expect. So, Alice, we'll start with you. We haven't heard from you in a couple weeks. Any little bits of entertainment news you'd like to share with the world? And by the world, I mean my parents.
Wait, Dave, are your parents listening to this?
Because I gotta
clean up my act.
I lied.
Okay. Oh, too bad. Well, hey, I saw Point Blank yesterday.
Ah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, one of my favorites of the year.
It was amazing. I loved it. It just started you right off in it, you know, the first scene, the chase start. So I watched that yesterday. And then I've been watching Alcatraz.
Yeah, did we talk about Alcatraz? I can't remember. I mean,
a little bit, yeah. I talked about the first few episodes.
What are your thoughts on that, Alice?
Well, I watched the first, the pilot, and I was kind of, you know, whatever, and I wasn't going to watch any more of it. But then someone talked me into watching the rest of it, and I enjoy it. I think it's a pretty good show. It's got potential. I just think nowadays we don't give shows enough chance. We want to be drawn in from episode one or we stop watching. So I gave it another chance, and I think it's pretty good. Anything, you know, I'm still looking for that replacement for Lost, which I haven't found yet. I think that show kind of was the pinnacle for me.
Yeah, you and Eric both. You guys will have to kind of do some maybe there's something like on Taiwanese television or something you guys can find.
I hear good things about Cougarton Abbey. So.
So I enjoyed it, though. The last I watched the four episodes that are released so far, and I'm enjoying it. That's got potential, and it's J.J. Abrams, so it's bound to be good.
All right, so you're going to stick with it then?
I'm going to stick with it for now. I did start off with Terra Nova, and I didn't even get through the pilot episode. No. I thought that was awful.
Yeah, I gave that a shot, too. I just don't have the, you're right, you don't have the time to invest.
Exactly. So I'll give Alcatraz a chance.
Right, that's a spirit we like to hear. How about you, Eric? You gonna bring the same positivity to this podcast?
Boy, not even a little bit. So I feel I've got something not so good to talk about and something good to talk about. And since it ties into what Alice was just talking about and is going to make me look like a complete jerk, I'll start with it. Not so good. But I caught the first couple episodes of the new show, The River.
I didn't see a single piece of I had no idea it was coming out.
Yeah, me neither. This is ABC's.
It's a Spielberg thing too, right?
Is it really? I had no idea.
I thought it was Spielberg produced. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think.
Is it found footage? Is it a found footage show?
Yeah, it's basically it's a found footage show. I should have checked. I thought I read somewhere that it was kind of created or co-created by the guy who did Paranormal Activity.
Oh yeah, okay.
That's what I heard too.
Yeah. So this is ABC's sort of suspense horror found footage show. The basic premise is that there's this kind of TV naturalist who had this long-running TV show with his family, and he goes out and, you know, looks for animals and does all this stuff. And then he disappears in the Amazon and is presumed dead, and his family with a film crew go out to try to see if he's still alive or dead. And they run into all this kind of weird stuff, as one would expect. And it was kind of underwhelming. I think that there's a few things kind of going against the show. First off, the found footage thing is kind of played out by now. I think it's difficult to do it in a way that's going to kind of surprise people. And this sort of has kind of the difficulty of being on a network. So it feels like anything they could have done well with the found footage formula has been kind of buried under a bunch of studio notes. it's you know, they had
tell me it turns into a crime procedural too, like everything else.
no, not really. But you sort of you know, they're not completely strict about the found footage thing. The thing about like the Paranormal Activity movies is that, you know, they really adhere to the idea that there are a few cameras set up the cameras are just catching what they see, and then weird stuff happens. In this case, you know, there's a lot more cameras, it seems, than there should be for what they've, you know, established. And instead of kind of having to hunt around and try to find the weird stuff, it's always like just front and center, and it's always accompanied by a music cue, and it always leads direct, and it always leads directly into commercial break. So it feels like, you know, a standard, you know, another ABC attempt to capture the magic of Lost, and they haven't done it. Another thing that's weird is that, like, because of the Paranormal Activity connection, they actually do things that are right out of those movies. Like, they have in one scene the nighttime countdown clock that speeds up out of the Paranormal Activity movies. Someone gets dragged away, just like it happens in all those movies. There's all these, like, little things that watching it, I'm thinking, boy, that they took that directly from those movies. Although the one thing, it doesn't even have it going for it, but the one thing I noticed is that there's a bunch of old 24 alums on the show, kind of lesser 24 alums. Terry Bauer is the mom, and that's not her name. Yeah. I know, but I can't remember her actually. And the guy who played Steven Saunders in 24 was a season 3, bad guy. He plays kind of the jerk producer. And then there's another guy who just kind of
European bad guy. Right?
Yeah. Of course. And there's at least one more guy who was on the show that I can't remember. He played someone named Max on 24, and I don't remember who that was. There's only a couple episodes, but so this is 24 production. So I assume that these are all people who were really missing being on a show that had a gimmick, and so they decided to be on the show. So, so two episodes in, not crazy about it. We'll see if I. Although now that Alice has made such a big point of, you know, sticking with shows, I feel like I have to watch more.
That's right. Yeah.
Don't be a jerk, Eric.
Don't give up.
Come on. All right. Well, I'll be nice about something else then. I also got a documentary on Netflix Instant called Zombie Girl the Movie, which is pretty interesting. It's about a 12-year-old filmmaker from Texas, a girl who wrote and directed a feature-length zombie movie. And this is kind of the story of her doing this. And she growing up with her mom, they did go to the Alamo Drafthouse, the famous theater, in Austin a lot. They go like three times a week. And this was, you know, as a young girl, she got really into movies. And, you know, her mom would take her to see, they saw Lord of the Rings like dozens of times, and they would go to like movie marathons, and she got really into like horror movies and zombie movies. And so she wanted to do one. So when she was 10, she wrote a script for a movie called Pathogen, and this is like her making it, you know, with her friends, and, you know, she has a vision for what she wants. She has storyboards, she has scripts, and it's all the problems along the way and all that kind of stuff. But what's really compelling about the movie, I mean, the story is interesting, I saw them, but what I really like is the family dynamic, because you have this, you know, this mother and daughter relationship, really. I mean, the father's around too, but her mother is the one who's, you know, not only driving her and her friends around to locations and, you know, hefting the boom mic and, you know, putting on the zombie makeup, but she spends like all weekend making a fake head for a decapitation scene. You know, I mean, she's really dedicated, and it's just you kind of see this, you know, it's really a portrait of, you know, a mother who's just supporting her daughter so fully. You know, it's not necessarily rare, but, you know, it's really kind of touching, especially as a parent myself. You know, it kind of touched me, and it's interesting too, because she's doing the kind of thing that I bet a lot of people, if they just heard it offhand, would think that she was kind of a terrible mother, that she would take her daughter to see, you know, R-rated movies, that she would, you know, help her daughter, you know, plan out bloody decapitation scenes and stuff like that. It's just, you know, to some people it would sound irresponsible, but, you know, she's a really, really dedicated mother. So, it's on Netflix Instant. I definitely recommend checking it out. Again, it's called Zombie Girl, the movie. The one criticism, or the one thing I wish they had included in the movie, is that there's no actual footage from the final film. It kind of leads up to the premiere, the sold out premiere at the Draft House, and then they sort of have some closing interviews, and that's about it. And I don't know why they don't show up, but it's sort of too bad. Just in this perspective that, you know, you watched her making it, and I was really curious to see how it turned out. But anyway, so I recommend that. Good movie.
All right, very good, Mac.
Yeah, let's see. I guess, well, going back to TV, I'll give a shout out to a show I really like. Which is, of course, they had the big blockbuster episode of Castle this week, which is the flashback to the 1940s. And basically it was an episode of Castle, but set in the 40s, with all the characters you know, dressed in the outfits and using the slang of the era, and it was done like a film noir type of thing. So it was a lot of fun. It was really it looked really cool and really stylish, and it was really great to sort of you know, see them break out and try something new and try something completely different on the show that they'd never done before. So, and judging by the reactions of everybody on Twitter, it was a huge hit.
All right. Now, what do the castle ratings look like? Is it pretty solid? I mean, is it just charging along nicely, Mac?
I believe so, yeah. You know, the other networks keep throwing shows against it, but it seems to be maintaining its audience, you know. Because when the Hawaii Five-0 premiere, they were like, oh, it's going to kill Castle, but Castle's, you know, still on the air. And now there's this, the new show that's like, I forget the name of it, it's like a Glee ripoff, is on opposite Castle now. And everyone's saying, oh, that's going to get all the ratings. But
that's right.
Yeah. So
no, that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
glad
chugging along. It's got a following.
Very good. I'm glad you're at the flashpoint of that. That's fantastic. I don't have much to say. I will say, though, I felt like I participated in an interactive zombie movie in here in New England after the Super Bowl. So it's the heartbreaking Super Bowl loss. Felt like I was part of a zombie film. So.
That was heartbreaking. We watched that. I was rooting for your Patriots, but they were
they were not rooting for themselves. in the final few minutes.
They didn't seem like that was rough. And whatever they could do to screw themselves over, they did. So sometimes I do wish, you know, growing up in New York, I had retained, you know, some kind of affinity for a New York team other than the Knicks, who perennially suck. You know, I just chose the wrong team. So that's about that. That's all I'll say. So,
well, I'm a Chargers-Padres fan, so I could commiserate with you on teams that suck every year.
Wow, so I'm surprised you're a New England person because, you know, people have – you know, the New England teams have benefited much from the Chargers and the Padres' ineptitude.
But I dislike the Giants even more. So
gotcha.
I had the root for one of them.
All right. Well, we're glad you're on the side, on our side. We can all draw on our tears. And a bowl of tears. Okay, so moving on. Stuff we're doing for the site. So lightning round. Alice, what do you got? Anything of interest?
I am working on the movie starring Justin Timberlake called In Time. And I am not, you know, I don't know, this Justin Timberlake bringing sexy back is just not my thing. But I have to say he was relatively good in this movie.
He tries hard in his stuff.
He does.
I haven't seen the movie, but he seems to try hard when he does.
It's an interesting premise. It's a movie where you don't age past the age of 25 and you can live forever. But the catch is you've got to earn the time like a paycheck. So time is currency.
Gotcha.
And if you're poor, it's harder, but if you're very wealthy, you can live, you can be immortal. So he's ended up inheriting some money from someone wealthy, and because the person gave him all the time, that person died, and then Timberlake is implicated in his death, so he has to try to upset the system in order to stay alive.
So are all that is the old white man cabal behind all the shenanigans?
I wondered if they were sort of, you know, taking pot shots at capitalism. It kind of seemed like it was, you know, because all the rich people were completely one-dimensional and selfish, and but it wasn't done in such an overhanded way that it was obnoxious and hard to watch. You could sort of overlook the whole, you know, Occupy Wall Street kind of a take on things and just enjoy the movie in and of itself. It was pretty good.
The old white man cabal needs more exposure, I think. I don't know. Have we gotten away from them? Have we gotten away from the OWMC?
Oh, I'm sure they'll show up again.
They will show up. That's true. They show up in every, like, sci-fi movie I review. They're always the ones behind the mutant boas that fight the mutant fight.
They're always lurking in the shadows.
That's right. We'll always have that. So. All right. Okay. Very good. Eric, how about you? What's happening?
This week I'm reviewing Drive, the Ryan Gosling, Nicholas Winning Refn movie. And I hadn't seen it before. This was the first time, and I heard lots of good things about it, and it really is great. I think if you haven't seen it and you haven't read too much about it, it's probably not what you think it is. Uh-huh. It's way more of like a kind of an indie crime drama than it is. It's not an action movie.
But with flashes of like extreme violence, though, right?
Oh yeah, there are moments of like, you know, extreme shocking violence, but it's mostly a very kind of carefully paced, kind of meditative movie in a lot of ways. There's a lot of slow motion shots. There's a lot of just kind of long stretches of silence. Ryan Gosling's character, who doesn't even get a name in the movie, is very very choice with his words. He doesn't speak very much. There are a lot of really great performances in it. A lot of great people are in it. Ryan Gosling, obviously. Albert Brooks has gotten a lot of praise. Ron Perlman is also great in it. So I recommend it. I don't want to say too much about it, but I think that it really is a unique movie. It harkens back. It kind of has a feel of sort of an 80s movie in the sense that there's kind of a very, very kind of synth-heavy soundtrack and some of the they have this kind of hot pink cursive font they use over the opening title and stuff. So it's harkening back to kind of earlier genre movies, but with its own vibe. So I liked it a lot.
All right. Nice.
Well, I just got it from Netflix today, so I can't wait to see it.
Good.
All right, Mac, how about you?
I've got a movie here. I don't know how much interest there is in this. It's called Stormhouse. It's a direct-to-DVD horror movie from Lionsgate.
All right.
Do I need to say anything more?
I mean, are there actual storms that happen inside a house?
No, actually, it's not that at all. So the premise here, if you can wrap your head around this, is the Army has managed to capture a ghost.
Okay.
And they're keeping
it. Don't tell me they're going to try to weaponize it. The Army always tries to weaponize it.
When spoiled it, Dave.
That's the ghost of.
First, they need to learn to control it. So they've got it in this cage. Right?
That is the laziest.
Ghost in a cage?
Yes.
Is that the laziest, like, the laziest plots you can ever come up with? Like, we want to. Bill came up with this drawing of this crocodile with five eyes. We want to put it in a movie. Let's have the Army weaponize it.
I mean, if they couldn't do it to Johnny Five, they can't do it to the ghost. That's all I'm saying.
This gets even better because they've got this cage. It's built out of chain link fence. And we're told that the ghost is trapped inside of it thanks to an electromagnetic field that we can't see, right?
Okay.
We can't see the ghost either, right?
Right. You're telling a lot that this is a high-budget movie. That's what you're telling.
Right. So basically our ghost or our movie monster is a chain-link fence that just sits there. So the girl who's psychic, she walks up to it, and all the soldiers are saying, oh, be careful! And the soldiers, they've got their guns, which is not proton packs or anything, just ordinary guns, and they're aiming it at the fence, in case something bad happens, and anytime something scary happens, there's a cut. They cut to a shot of the fence to show that, that's what's causing it all. So,
I love it.
Wow. This is actually pretty amazing because you tapped right into my ambush topic, which we'll get to. This is an amazing coincidence. But anyway, so what are we looking at? A thumbs up or thumbs down here?
Well, if you have a crippling fear of chain link fences, this is going to be the movie that'll... it's a horror milestone if you have that fear.
Okay, so quick ambush topic. What would a better name for the movie be?
What was it? Stormhouse was the one?
Stormhouse.
That's a good call. Good audible. Better name for a movie.
On the fence.
On the fence.
That's not bad.
That's
not bad. Oh, boy.
Death fence. You need death or dead. And there's
good.
The fence of the dead.
Good. Oh, man.
How about offensive?
That's not too bad. That's not bad.
I mean, to be fair, I only had ghost fence, so I really wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking anything too high. But at least it's more descriptive.
Genius!
Oh, man.
I mean, after watching Drive, I want something that's just simple, direct, tells you exactly what you're going to get.
There you go. I've got no idea. I don't know what you would say. Chain link chiller? Oh, that's good. All right. Okay, I'm going to go next because I don't want to go back. Okay, so that sounds great, though, Mac. That sounds like a classic. I had a movie called The Coast Guard, a 2002 film made in Korea. And so the Blu-ray shows up, and, I had scoped it out when it was on the request list. And there's, there's army guys running along this coast with their guns. There's airplanes flying over the water. There's a battleship exploding. And that's on the cover. And it is not anything like that at all. It's just like 90-minute character study of this crazy private in a coast guard who murders someone and in front of his girlfriend. His girlfriend goes crazy. He goes crazy. Everyone just kind of goes nuts. And everyone's in trouble. And his coast guard friends end up, impregnating the crazy girl who's like essentially, you know, has no idea what's going on. And they get her pregnant. I think they force her to have an abortion or something. It is not quite the Michael Bay experience. Let me put it this way.
Dave, so you're unclear about whether there's an abortion in the movie. That's how confusing the movie is. Because normally that's pretty clear.
I'm pretty sure. I'm 95% sure. I'll tell you that. But this, yeah, and I'll tell you this much: it may have happened. My eyes were not glued to the screen. It probably happened. I was not watching.
Okay, actually, I'd like to back up to my earlier ambush topic. Ghost Guard would be a pretty good name.
There you go. Yeah,
yeah, like that.
Not bad. So anyway, but yeah, so that is just a complete nutshot as far as advertising goes. So stay away from. So there's no battleships at all, or no planes. I don't understand how they get away with putting an exploding battleship. Exploding battleship and not deliver. Unbelievable.
The producer's cousin did a painting of an exploding battleship.
Hey, that's right. We need to get this in here. We need to weaponize this.
To be fair, Dave, when you think of the Coast Guard, do you think of exploding battleships? Or do you think of, like, ladders and pulleys and stuff like that?
I don't think about impromptu forced abortions.
Right. So, I mean, I'm saying the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere, yeah, that's true. That's correct. So, all right. So let's move on, Mac. Why don't you take us elsewhere, please?
Okay. We're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. The site's gone through a little redesign here, so to find the product list, we're going to go to click on release dates, and from there you can scroll down to the cover art gallery for February 14th. And we're going to take a look at what's on the list here and see what jumps out at us as interesting.
I think you know you've got an interesting week when the biggest release is Human Centipede 2.
Oh, my.
Although maybe I didn't see something. Oh, sorry, I didn't see Family Matters on there. So never mind.
Oh, yes. About time.
Although both movies include the phrase, did I do that? So.
Oh, is this the first season of Family Matters?
Second.
Second season. Mm. I think this is when Urkel fever gripped the nation, I believe.
Did it. I missed that fever.
Back when we were all eating Urkelos and hiking up our pants.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
There's not much, is there?
Do you know anything about this movie, The Perfect Weapon? Kind of looks like up your alley there, Dave.
Let's see, The Perfect Weapon. It looks pretty awesome, but who's in it? It's made from Olive Films, which we all know. It stars Jeff Speakman.
There you go.
Ooh, it's made in 91, and that's in the sweet spot of crappy straight-to-DVD. Oh, man, I might need to jump on that. Yeah. It's right up there with Undefeatable, one of my favorites.
we've also got, well, I guess Storage Wars Season 2, that's a thing. Rum Diary was a movie that it's a Johnny Depp movie. I don't know much about
it. It's Johnny Depp, he's revisiting Hunter S. Thompson.
Right. So I guess that beats Human Centipede.
Now, is this Dragon Age, is this based on, like, the game?
It's a web series that's a spinoff of to promote the game.
Yeah, I think that's Felicia Day from the Guild. Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it's kind of they play it straight. It's like a real.
I actually haven't seen it, but supposedly it's in the same like continuity as the game.
Look, we're nerds, but we're not that big of nerds. No, Dave, did I see that you got Wayne Days to review?
I did. I'm looking forward to checking.
You told me about that show, didn't you?
I don't know.
I think I watched the first season. I liked it.
I mean, it's that kind of state humor that we
use. Yeah, it was just good.
Hmm. Is it British or is it American?
No, it's David Wayne, and he was like one of the guys from. You ever see The State? The MTV's The State. He's one of the guys there. And, I don't know. Doesn't he have a bunch of state alum in that? It's been a while, actually.
Yeah, probably. I forgot they always have it
until it showed up. So.
Yeah, what is it? Sketch comedy or
it's like a web series? No, it's not a sketch comedy, really.
It's hard. It's probably not quite right to say it's like Curb Your Enthusiasm state style, but it's kind of.
Doesn't he play David Wayne? But just
yeah, I think so. I think basically, yeah.
I haven't watched it yet, but I do remember enjoying it. Hey, there's the Short Circuit double feature we've all been waiting for.
Oh, of course. Yeah. In case you didn't have them already.
Yeah. On VHS.
So, Wow, Short Circuit 2 got 2 thumbs up, huh? Nice. That's a score. Out of the 2. Okay, here's an ambush topic for you. You are forced to watch one of the 2 movies in constant loop for a week straight. Which one is it? Short Circuit or Short Circuit 2? You've been captured and held in Gitmo, and they're trying to extract your phone. You can choose Short Circuit or Short Circuit 2 to watch on a constant loop.
I think when I was a kid, I actually did do that with the first one. So.
Good, you steeled yourself against those attackers. We can't reach him, General.
You're like the man in black from The Princess Bride. It took just a little bit of poison.
That's right.
You know, it's funny. I think I probably watched Short Circuit 2 more when I was a kid. Okay. For some reason, when I was a kid, I would watch the sequels of movies. Like, I saw Police Academy 2 like a billion times. But I don't know if I've ever seen the original Police Academy.
I love Police Academy 2, and I don't know why.
Two words.
I like Bobcat Goldthwait.
Okay, exactly, Bobcat. Okay,
that's right. Can't get off of Police Academy 2 for some reason. For some reason, when Steven Guttenberg goes undercover as Jughead from the Archies. That's funny for some reason, though it's objectively not. I don't understand. All right, so that's 1 vote for Short Circuit, 1 vote for Short Circuit 2. Alice, if you had to choose.
A bullet.
Yeah, a bullet or one of these. That's your choice, a bullet. Or
a bullet to the brain, how about that?
Okay, so Alice takes the coward's way out.
I'm sorry, I don't think I can take either one.
I'll go with a first one, just because I haven't seen it recently. I saw Short Circuit 2 more recently.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that the fact that I watched Short Circuit 2 more as a kid does not count as a vote.
Too late.
All right, well, let's move on to this segment. So, inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week. Alice, why don't you go first?
Oh, how about Devil's Rock?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad, Eric.
Under the Boardwalk.
That was my second choice.
Mac?
Boing, boing.
Oh, boy, wow. That's I missed that one. It's good.
We go with Smash, Mash, and Crash.
I've been there. Don't know what that means.
I don't know either. So we'll move on anyway to our ambush topics, our final phase here. We'll just throw some random topics at each other. I'll go first because I hinted at it, but no joke. This isn't something I made up typically like I do 2 minutes before we go on this segment, but something haunted other than a house.
Hmm.
And it can't use chain link fence now.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
I had that one ready to go.
Something haunted other than a house.
So go with the I'm blanking on the name of the doll from the Trilogy of Terror. What was the name of that?
Oh, the Zuni fetish doll.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. The Ebi doll.
Zuni.
Zuni.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure it was Zuni. I don't want to be wrong.
All right. Well, I don't know that name. So in that case, I'll go with Chucky.
Okay.
Haunted doll from Child's Play.
Now the question is he haunted or is he possessed, and is there a difference?
Well, I don't know. Since Brad Dourif is involved, I think
we'll go with haunted.
All right.
Then I'm going to take the Ebi doll or the Zuni doll.
Okay,
that's fine. I gave it away. I put it left.
I'm
on
stealing it.
You can put it up there, and she's that's fine. Man.
I saw that movie when I was a kid, and that scared the bejesus out of me. I couldn't sleep for weeks.
I'm glad that you brought it. You personalized that. That's good. We'll allow that theft to hold up.
Yeah, that movie's a classic.
It is. It really is.
All right, Mac, what do you got?
This is pretty weak, but there's a movie, One Missed Call, about the haunted cell phone.
Ouch. That's like the one that came out last year or something.
2 years
ago. Well,
it's a remake of the Japanese one.
Wait a minute. I think I may have reviewed like the sequel to that. Okay, I gotcha.
Probably, yeah. It's a mini franchise. Yeah.
Was that good? Is it a good movie?
I know I saw it. I'm trying to remember. I guess it didn't have much of an impact on me.
So yes. I think the answer is yes. Clearly.
Yes. Yes. All right, well, I've got something that's even lamer than the chain link fence. It was one of the many the Amityville. Amityville Horror, you know? It was like the fifth one or something. And Horror. Yeah, there's a bunch of them, and they were haunting different things. And this one was about a haunted clock. The clock was haunted. But the worst part is the name of the movie was The Amityville Horror, It's About Time.
Oh, that's good. Oh, so, wait, so you have a haunted clock. What does it do? Does it, like, change the alarm so you wake up late for work?
I wish it was that interesting. I don't know what it did. It just sent out bad vibes and people acted poorly to one another. So it was terrible.
Because
that would be more clever. Yeah, like screwing up people's, you know, taking their insulin, you know, screwing it up.
You forgot daylight saving time. You missed your favorite show.
End of horror, spring. So yeah, that was really lame.
That's the premise of all those Amityville sequels, right? It's the object that was once in the Amityville house is now in somebody else's house.
That's right. So that's what they
do. So that's the clock.
Recycling appliances, right.
Exactly. Because another sequel has the mirror was the one.
Yep, that's right. I read that one as well.
Go ahead, please. Like, no.
How many of them were there? I have no idea.
I think so.
In fact, that's a piece of trivia. I'm proud of myself for not knowing. But back to the number, so that's great.
So the idea is that basically they had a yard sale, haunted yard sale, and everything just went out. It's not like the thing that was in the house goes to one house and then the next one is the thing that was in the thing that was in the house.
Right.
So like you have a haunted clock spring in six.
Well, if you think about it, it's kind of ingenious because you have an infinite number of sequels by playing.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So. A salad fork in one.
Absolutely.
Dinner fork in the next one.
It's salad tongs.
Oh, man. You got a salad franchise alone.
That's true. The salad spinoff, right? Salad series. The Amityville salad series.
Salad spinoff. Salad spinner. It's a joke.
That's right. Amityville salad. Great Caesar's go. Okay. Go. Someone go. Go, Mac. Go.
Oh, man. Well, I can't top that. So this weekend is the big weekend, the one we're all looking forward to. Phantom Menace in 3D.
That's right. Everyone, you've asked for it and they deliver.
Yeah, so in honor of Phantom Menace returning to theaters, I thought I'd break out the Obsessed with Star Wars trivia book again and see who here on the podcast is the most obsessed with Star Wars.
Awesome. So you remember... I know this. It's you. Did I win?
You did. I just hope one of the answers is Salacious Crumb. That's all I'm
looking for. Oh, man. Oh.
Remember, this is the book that has a little electronic doohickey on the cover that tells you it picks the question for you and tells you if you're right or wrong.
All right, let's do it. Let's see how nerdy I am.
Yeah. All right, Eric. Question number 71. Let's see here. Your category is Phantom Menace in 3D.
Ooh, all right, in 3D, good.
All right, question 71. Who replaced Captain Magneta as head of the Royal Naboo Security Force?
I believe that's pronounced Magenta.
It's Magneta. Magneta.
Sorry.
Magneta?
No, I'm sure his name isn't Magenta. Just like Rear Admiral Burnt Umber.
Oh, man, you stole my answer.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
All right. Who replaced Captain Magenta as head of the Royal Naboo Security Force? Was it A, Captain Tarples, B, Captain Panaka, C, Captain Cronell, or D, Captain Zusta?
Wow.
How does George Lucas responsible for anything good? With names like that. One of those is right. That's the problem.
I bet all of them are actual characters, though, too.
And I'm going to go with Tarples, because it sounds like a thing.
Like carpal tunnel syndrome.
Exactly, that's what it sounds like. It's like, oh, I'm so tired of typing out the script for this.
Oh, incorrect.
Oh,
I would have guessed that.
Panaka? Was it Panaka?
She's right, it's Captain Panaka.
Congratulations.
That's when George Lucas was trying to freshen his breath and said, huh, Panaka.
All right, who's going next? Alice, you're up?
Yeah, go for Alice.
All right.
Oh, my topic?
No, you're going to get a quiz.
You got your question here. Question number 1,810.
Wow.
So almost there. This is a big book. Okay, let's see. Your category is Empire Strikes Back.
Uh-oh.
Who was Rogue Two? Was it A, Saji Jarl, B, Zev Sineska, C, Maury Aglat, or D, Kasan Moore.
I actually think it's the character's name is Rogue, too, because there's that deleted scene where Leia got hit on by those three rogues right in their body.
What was C again?
C was Maury Aglat.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'm going to go with that one because it sounds kind of Jewish. So, C, Maury Aglat.
C. Oh, incorrect.
Oh.
Correct answer was B, Zev Sineska.
So, I mean, are we pretty clear that when George Lucas made up character names, he just reached into a bag of Scrabble tiles? It seems like the...
I think that's what, definitely.
Yep.
All right, Dave, you're up. Yep. Question 803.
Okay.
All right, your category is Attack of the Clones. And your question, who killed the Kahoons that were attacking Padme?
Who killed the Kahoons that were attacking Padme?
Is it A, R2-D2, B, Captain Typho, C, Anakin Skywalker, or D, Obi-Wan Kenobi?
I'm going to go with Captain Typho.
Okay. Oh, incorrect. Correct answer was C, Anakin.
Now, every time you get a wrong answer, does that thing zap you with that R2-D2 electric prod that he has?
No. You probably can't hear it, but it's a little buzzing sound.
Okay, just...
Dave, are you referring to the electric prod he used to knock Salacious Crumb off of C-3PO? And
there you go, that's good.
Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
And then when he unleashed on that Ewok who had been torturing, remember? He got back at him. So, yeah, I think that's worth a geek point for us.
All right. No Stockholm Syndrome for him.
No, sorry. I think that wasn't that a deleted line that Han Solo was going to say? No Stockholm Syndrome for him, huh, Chewie?
Do you think they had the equivalent of Stockholm in, a galaxy far, far away?
Oh, they must.
No Coruscant Syndrome for him. all right. So did we pass, Mac, or...?
I guess, unless you want me to answer one.
Yeah, I'm going to see. Let's move on to Alice. I'm going to Google one for Mac that we'll get to later. So, Alice.
Oh, okay.
So, my topic is, last time I was on the show, we didn't get to do this, so this is sort of my honorary or my initial ambush topic. So, I hope I don't get you guys in any trouble, but the topic is most annoying feminist on TV or in a movie.
Oh, all right.
Most annoying feminist.
I've been wanting to do that topic forever. But I just felt I didn't have
to. So, feminist character or feminist like celebrity? Okay, fair.
Both. Why not? Character or celebrity?
So you want us to indulge in our chauvinistic tendencies? Is that what you're saying? You're giving us the green light, and you're not going to judge us? Is that what you're saying?
I will not judge you at all. Kind of, maybe.
Boy, I guess I got to go with what Dave would probably pick if he were a little bit faster, but I'm going to go Jesse Spano.
Yeah, good call, yeah.
I mean, and I will stretch that out to all of Elizabeth Berkeley's later career decisions.
So they certainly know they were like nosedives as far as if you looked on the feminist, if you tracked them on the feminist graph, she went from Jesse Spano to like a nameless prostitute and then in Sunday. So.
I don't know, Dave. Some people find that to be empowering.
That's true. I guess I don't know if this counts, but it's like the worst line ever uttered by a strong female character. I don't know if this is going to count or not. So it's Storm in the first X-Men and that terrible line about what happens when a toad gets struck by lightning.
Right.
I can't get over how terrible that line is.
Yeah.
And
it
takes away her this in a second, and I just don't think she's believable.
The commentary track has the alternate line.
Oh, it does? Really?
Yeah. But they said that the line they didn't choose, what they regretted, they said, what happens to a toad when it's electrocuted? The alternate line was, it croaks.
I would have taken that.
Yeah, that would have been better.
Just as terrible, but I would have taken it.
I don't. I'm not sure. I guess we can count it, although it probably should have been what happens when a pig gets electrocuted for it to really count. It's a feminist line or something.
That's
feminist.
Exactly.
And then Toad would have responded, oink, oink, baby.
Also a better line, I guess.
Those are all on the deleted scenes.
And what if you, so there's X-Men Saved by the Bell, you know, mashup. We will table that discussion for another time. So which Saved by the Bell characters would be which X-Men, but let's keep that in the back of our minds.
Keep that in your pocket for sure. What about you, Mac?
Let's see. Well, while you were talking, I actually looked it up because I wanted to get it correct. The 80s sitcom Square Pegs, that the girl nerds. One of the girl nerds' rivals was the always perky Muffy Tepperman, mm-hmm. who was always going on feminist rants. And Muffy was kind of interesting, actually, because she existed in this space in between the nerds and the cool girls. She was someone that they could both hate.
Yeah.
And the hatred of Muffy is what brought them together.
I like that show. That was pretty funny.
Johnny Slash?
Yeah. Yep.
That's a totally different head, man. A totally different head.
Wow, I'm lost.
I know. You had to see the show. It was pretty funny. It only lasted one season, but it was pretty funny. Well, the reason I came up with this topic is because we get this channel, it's RTV or something, it's all these retro shows from the past, and I was watching this episode of Maude. Do you remember that show from the 70s? And I tell you, what's her name? Adrienne Barbeau and Bea Arthur. She played the title character of Maude.
Oh, okay.
And she was always walking around in these, you know, scarves and these long pantsuits, and she had no respect for her husband, and she was always, every episode, she would have this monologue where she would just go off and rant and talk about how men were this and pigs were that, and it was just, I remember seeing it when I was a kid, but then watching it as an adult, I'm looking at it going, I can't believe that this show even made it past one season. Mm-hmm. She was annoying, and everything had to be about, you know, empowering women. It didn't matter what it was. So that was why I picked it.
So was she emasculating her husband? Is that
completely. Completely. He had no gonads left. And she was about 2 feet taller than him, too.
Well, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was just physical fear he was living in. You know?
I think
maybe he was being domestically abused by her. That's possible as well.
Yeah, didn't get that deep, but...
All right, well, mental note, stay away from Maude and Square Pegs. Continue watching Saved by the Bell, though.
Exactly, right. I was about to say. Yeah. Well, 2 out of 3 proves that you're not a complete chauvinist.
That's right. It was Julie. What about Julie on Hang Time? She was pretty good, right? I mean, she was great at basketball, but she wasn't like a jerk about it, right?
No.
Like and the boys. She asserted herself on the basketball court and...
Yeah, she didn't have anything to prove, really. She was accepted
by her peers, her male peers. I mean,
except for that time she totally cheated on her boyfriend, I can't remember his name now, by kissing that other guy at basketball camp. I could not believe that. She's such a tramp.
That's true.
That was the show's dark era.
It was dark.
I was so mad.
Of course, the counter argument was maybe she did so well because the regulation size of that basketball court was about a quarter of an inch. All right,
it was about the size of a TV studio. Approximately, give or take.
Oh, man, that was pretty funny. Okay, Eric, wrap us up.
Okay, time travel gone awry.
Oh, boy. Time travel gone awry.
Like, there's so many, but...
Well, I'll go with... The one that... One of my all-time... favorite funniest moments in The Simpsons is in the Halloween Treehouse of Horror, where they keep screwing up the past, you know?
Right.
And I know,
the toaster.
Toaster, and then just one of my favorite gags is he goes back, you know, what's a donut? Then he freaks out, leaves, and rains donuts, and says, "Rain again." What a great gag. So. Probably an easy one, but.
It's good that he I'm sorry. I was going to say, it's good. He finally settles in the version of reality where everything's normal except everyone has giant snakes.
Giant lasers. That's right.
Close enough. So, I'm sorry, Alice. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. I was just going to say an episode of Doctor Who. I think it was the first season of the new installment where he takes Rose someplace, and then he comes back and he tells her it was just 12 hours and it was actually a year later, and her mother thought she was dead. So. Mother thought she was dead after all this time and didn't know where she was. So he took her back instead of 12 hours later, 12 months later. That's kind of gone awry, don't you think?
Yeah. And then he had to come up with some excuse where he couldn't just take her back again because it would have been a paradox. And
yeah,
so it's like she basically lost a whole year. A
whole year of her life, thanks to Doctor Who. That works, don't you think?
That's great. Oh, yeah. No, that's good.
And I'm back here. Mac, bring it home. What do you got?
Okay, well, how about Back to the Future Part 2 and the alternate Hill Valley with Biff's casino?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And ultra slutty Marty's mom.
She was, I don't know if she was really slutty. She was stuck in a loveless marriage.
Oh, nice.
She was misunderstood. That's all.
Eric's like the only chivalrous guy around here.
I'm just saying her husband was, her died under mysterious circumstances.
That's true.
And then she was, I don't know, she had to have someone, I don't know. I mean, maybe she should have been stronger and said no to Biff. But you know, I don't know. Let's not get into this now. Anyway, my, now, the reason I thought of this is I just wrapped up the third season of Misfits, the show I've been watching. Mm-hmm. Speaking of British sci-fi shows, this is the one about the kind of the 20-something people with powers and kind of a, you know, very slangy kind of tongue-in-cheek take on the stuff. And there's one episode in the third season where one of the people, because everyone basically, most of the people have powers after this freak storm, and one of them is this old guy who goes back in time to kill Hitler, but instead he accidentally gets, Hitler punches him out and steals his cell phone. So when he goes back to the present, Nazi Germany won because they had this technological advantage of finding a modern day cell phone in the 1940s. You know, there are some issues with that, with the logic of that, but it made for a pretty entertaining episode and a pretty good finale where someone did go back and punch Hitler and,
That's good. Hitler punching.
Hitler punching, yeah.
Very good. Well, before we wrap it up, Mac, I'm going to give you a quick lightning 10-question extreme Star Wars quiz.
Oh, geez.
Okay, ready? Here we go.
Extreme.
That's what it's called. Extreme Star Wars. That's what
Mountain Dew presents the Friday Philip <That's right. laughs> Max Extreme
they
Star
the letter
Wars.
They did the E in front of it, so they didn't go extreme. So. All right, here we go. Question one. George Lucas makes a cameo appearance in Episode 3 of Star Wars as which character?
Baron Papanoida.
Okay. Wow. In Star Wars, Count Dooku throws more than two objects at Yoda. True or false?
More than two? I'm going to go false.
Okay. The blue Senate guards that first appear in Star Wars Episode 1 are armed with what? Force pikes, swords, grenade launchers, or blaster rifles?
I'm going to go force pikes.
Star Wars character General Grievous is always accompanied by two Magna Guards. True or false?
True.
Which Imperial commander is killed by an A-Wing in Star Wars Episode 6? Fill in the blank.
Killed by an A-Wing? Imperial commander? Boy. You stumped me on that one.
Okay, well, pass. Does Lando make a threatening move towards Han Solo in Star Wars Episode 5? Yes or no?
Make a threatening move?
Yes. Might be subjective, but
that's on here. Could argue this one. I'm going to say no.
Okay. How did fictional character Han Solo win the Millennium Falcon? Think of this about fictional. It was given to him. He won it in a Savic game. He won it in a bet, and he stole it.
I believe he won it in a Savic game.
Question 8.
It might be the bet, but I think it's the game.
Who did the fictional spacecraft the Millennium Falcon belong to before Han Solo got it?
Belonged to Lando.
Okay. Question 9. What planet is Alia Sakura killed on in Star Wars Episode 3? Mygeeto, Dagobah, Felucia, or Mantell?
Felucia.
All right. And how many types of Imperial soldiers appear in the Star Wars movies? 7, 6, 5, 3.
7.
Okay. Here we go. Submit answers. The interwebs are working. Question one, correct. It was Baron Papanoida, and you win everything just for getting that right.
I have the action figure.
Oh, man. You have the action figure, Baron Papanoida. Question two, false. Count Dooku throws two fuel cells and some boulders at Yoda.
Ooh.
Question three, false. The Blue Guards use... It's not force spikes, it's blaster rifles.
I thought that, but I didn't go with that. Dang it.
Question four, Star Wars General Grievous is always accompanied by two Magna Guards. False. He's got four Magna Guards around him. Which Imperial commander is killed by an A-Wing? Star Wars, either these are acceptable. Piet, Admiral Firmus Piet, Admiral Piet, or Firmus Piet? Piet. See, does Lando make a training move towards Han Solo?
Empire Strikes Back, not in Star Wars.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Does Lando make a threatening move toward Han Solo? Yes, he does, apparently. Question seven. He won in a Sabacc game. Well done.
Nice.
I typed in Lando, and they said the only acceptable answer was Lando Calrissian, but we'll let that one fly. Belushia is correct, so again, not
nice,
bad.
Nice.
And it was six types of Imperial soldiers, not seven.
Trick question.
Stormtroopers, Biker Scouts, Imperial Guards, Snowtroopers, Death Star Gunners, and Sand Troopers.
They're not counting all the Clone Troopers.
I bet you can find some more. I don't know. Those Death Star Gunners are just like those guys with the giant popcorn bowls on their heads, right? Yeah. So you still have my respect, Mac. So,
How many did it get right then?
Yeah. Let's see. 3 of 10 questions. Well, 4 of 10.
No, that's it.
Because I gave you Lando. Yeah, because Lando's my fault. 4 of 10.
Well, I'd say if you get like 2 or less, you're not a big enough Star Wars nerd. And if you get 5 or more, you are way too big of a Star Wars nerd. So I think you hit the sweet spot. I say congratulations.
Well done.
Good job.
We will end the Friday Filibuster. Thank you to Eric, Mac, and Alice. And FridayFilibuster@DVDVerted.com is the email address. And Mac, take us away.
Nosedive.